All right.
Why not?
Why not?
Are you
okay?
Okay. Mine? Yes, you can do whatever you... If, when you finish reading it, pass it on.
If you'll pay double, you can have this one.
We share that, eh?
Well, welcome everybody to the November Freethinkers meeting. My name is Phil Rylett. I think... Do we all know one another? Would be,
not really.
If not, Patrick can introduce us.
That's Henry, that's
here.
Philip, that's
Arden
Murphy, Humurku,
Emily.
Emily
Bren.
Bren. That's Lou.
Susie Lindemann. And Lindy Lindemann.
Susie and Lindy.
Okay, well, welcome. Thank
hey,
you.
Patrick.
Excellent job, Patrick. So at very few house rules. One, they expect us to spend, how much is it?
80 pesos
for use of the room. Excuse me, I don't want a few drinks or what we used to be able to do is continue on afterwards.
Yes.
But then close the bar on us at 6 o'clock. So
that always close the bar.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Is that?
No idea.
You mean the people coming in here to eat can't have anything to drink?
Yeah, the restaurants close as well.
Something you do for holidays, but it seems like they would open longer during the holidays.
Well, it is the end of November. Anyway, so this week I came across an article, and it was about the increasing strength of the placebo effect.
Yeah.
And then over the years, the placebo effect has got stronger.
I read that somewhere recently, didn't I?
It is a recent article, so yeah.
Yeah.
And this is playing havoc with some of the drug manufacturers, because, you know, their baseline is shifting to making it more difficult to prove that their drugs are effective. But it was interesting to think that, you know, it's getting stronger. Why would that be?
There's more ailments, so it cures more of them.
Could be. I got a couple of theories. I've got a small article. I'll read that first just to give us something to chew on. But I was also thinking about the situation in one of the Scandinavian countries. There was an atheist poll done, and everyone was feeling good because the numbers of people going to churches and involved in organized religion has plummeted. But there's a big rise in a sort of New Age, Wiccan. So people are just exchanging one irrational belief for another.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if we use affiliation to recognized religion, then we may be fooling ourselves to think that the world is becoming a more rational place. And I don't know whether this placebo effect will add to that doubt or not, but here it goes. So it's over the last several years, evidence has been accumulating that the placebo effects are becoming more powerful. Clinical trials on a range of medications used for treating both psychological and medical problems are finding that the differences in the magnitude of their impact relative to placebos are decreasing in size. For example, in early 2002, Merck Pharmaceuticals was on the verge of releasing a promising new antidepressant, codenamed MK-869. The development and preliminary testing of MK-869 had been exorbitantly expensive, but it was about to pay off. MK-869 had performed brilliantly in early clinical trials, better than several other popular antidepressants on the market. In what has become an increasingly common story, plans for releasing MK-869 ultimately came to a halt after evidence accumulated that the new medication failed to outperform the placebo treatment. For pharmaceutical companies, the growing power of antidepressant placebos is a vexing problem, resulting in substantially reduced investment in this area. The growing potency of placebos is not limited to psychiatric drugs. when researchers started looking closely at pain drug clinical trials, they found that an average of 27% of patients in 1996 reported pain reduction from new pain medications being developed relative to placebo pills. By 2013, that difference had shrunk to just 9%. In the last decade, more than 90% of painkillers developed in the United States have failed to show a significant improvement over placebos in the final stages of clinical trials. At this point, we can only speculate about the factors contributing to the growing potency of placebos. While research into the mechanisms underlying the effects of placebo treatments is in its infancy, we do know that increasing people's expectations regarding the occurrence of a non-volitional response increases its likelihood of occurring. This type of expectancy effect plays a key role in hypnotic suggestion. One possibility is that public expectations regarding the potency of specific types of medications are increasing. In the case of psychiatric drugs, there has been a growing shift towards viewing emotional problems from a disease model perspective and towards considering medication rather than psychotherapy as the treatment of choice. For example, since the late 70s when Prozac and other selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors first came out and the widespread publicity associated with this new generation of drugs, antidepressant use in the United States soared by over 65%. In fact, antidepressants are now the third most commonly prescribed medication in the country. Interestingly, in the case of pain medications, the placebo effect has become stronger in the United States, but not in Europe. So what might account for this difference? So one possible factor is that the United States allows direct advertising to consumers, while European countries do not. Thus, American consumers are more primed to expect positive benefits from pain medications than Europeans. This explanation is particularly plausible given the fact that pain perception is strongly mediated by psychological factors. So while the growing power of placebos is a major problem for pharmaceutical companies, it does bring home the importance of conducting research on the mechanisms underlying the impact of the placebo effect. Some readers may remember the book The Web Has No Weaver. Sounds a bit like the watchmakers. Written by Ted Kapchuk, one of the first Westerners to study acupuncture in China after the open door policy was established in 1978. Kapchuk's book was one of the first Western books written on Chinese medicine, and it had a major impact in promoting the widespread use of acupuncture and other forms of Chinese medicine in the West. For many years, Kapchuk had an extremely successful practice in Chinese medicine and was acknowledged as one of the foremost authorities on the topic. Increasingly over time, however, he became convinced that the quality of the relationship he was able to cultivate with his patients and their faith in his ability to be helpful to them played key roles in his success as a practitioner of Chinese medicine. So in 2011, Kapchuk was hired to head up the program of placebo studies at Harvard Medical School. And the program is an interdisciplinary team that explores the impact of patient-physician relationship, hope, trust, persuasion, and other psychological and interpersonal variables on the healing process in medicine. So the program for placebo studies has received widespread media attention. It's playing an important role in stimulating a broader interest in the area of placebo studies. At a time when the pendulum in American psychiatry and psychology has swung decidedly in the direction of privileging brain science research at the expense of psychological and social dimensions, some of the leading edge research in medicine is becoming more interdisciplinary in nature. That's the end of the article. The first thing that struck me in this, and I'll just toss this one out, is that, and I think, Hank, you mentioned this in an email, you know, we, evidence-based knowledge, you know, is always the foundation for a sound belief, right? Have I summarized your...
No, my article is about that even when you tell people this is a placebo, it has no active ingredients, take it anyway, It won't.
Yeah.
Take it anyway, and we'll see what happens. People get better.
I'll go into that. I studied that study. but I think one of the problems is that we use evidence as one of the key factors in our belief structure, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, show me the evidence and I'll believe.
Whose belief structure?
Okay.
Skeptical people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't say the average American, for instance,
cares
about evidence.
No. But I don't think they have a belief structure as much as a faith structure.
That's been proven in every election.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, and a lot of people suffer from faith trumping belief. You know,
yes,
and faith is belief without evidence, right?
Yes, and very skeptical of scientific and
learning,
knowledge in general.
But I was, as a process person, as a systems person, I was told if you can't measure it, it doesn't exist. And I always had a problem with subjective evidence. What do you do with subjective evidence? What do you do with people who suffer depression? Or anything else the way where the only measure is someone's internal feelings. So, what? I don't know how to answer that question. I'm hoping you do.
Yeah.
How do you?
That's very hard to do.
Yeah, because obviously placebos, the placebo effect is real, without doubt.
Mm-hmm.
The effect is real. But obviously, if you're going to give placebos to someone in a coma, you know, it ain't going to do much good. You need, you know, that conscious belief.
Well,
sorry,
it could be simply a sense of benefit through this. I've been paid attention to, I've been given this, and I stir up some hope that it's going to deal with whatever issue I'm dealing with.
But do you think, let me give you an example of homeopathic asthma inhalers. Which you can buy. They did a test on homeopathic asthma inhalers with a group of people who were severely compromised in their breathing. They were quite close to a respiratory crisis. So they gave one group nothing. They gave another group the homeopathic inhalers. And they gave another one the regular salbutamol inhaler that actually has an active ingredient in it. Now, the ones who received nothing said their condition didn't change at all. They were still. But the placebo, the homeopathic, I'm saying it's a placebo. It's a placebo. The homeopathic and the real drug, they both said they felt equally improved in their condition. The difference being that the actual physical condition of the people who took the regular inhaler was actually improved. The people who took the homeopathic inhaler, their blood gases, their situation had not really changed, and they were as close to crisis as they were before they took the medication.
But so they felt better.
Hmm?
But they felt better,
but they weren't better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were close to as close to a crisis as they were before.
See, but that's not really a fair test. I mean, I don't really know what the. I'm not sure, but. The people who got nothing, were they, did they see the doctor and the doctor say, well, you know, I'm worried about you and I think you're going to get better, just, you know, take it easy and be good to yourself and stuff like that.
This was just, I can't remember the actual study, I think they were just asked.
Because those other two groups got that.
Yes.
As a side effect of whatever pill they were getting.
Yes. I think they got an inhaler that they didn't.
And that's a big part of the curative effects of placebos is the interaction with somebody who cares.
Yes. And the study where they told them they were placebos,
mm-hmm.
if you read the study, there's only one study being done.
Right.
And if you read it, it gives you the blurb that the doctor told the placebo group.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in this hospital, they're in this room, this guy with a stethoscope and his white coat approaches
right.
them. and says, we're going to give you a placebo. Now, placebo is an inert substance that's been shown.
They don't know what
you know, and they're like, oh, okay. Well, then they were still taking pills, although their understanding of what was happening was never shown. So yeah,
they may not know what it was.
Where did this take place? In the States?
I believe it was in the States, yeah.
Hopefully in the middle of America where people don't think.
But they, you know, they were given information by an authoritarian figure. Yeah. And they were part of a study and there was a certain expectation that something might happen. So the conclusion they came to, and this study is widely, you know, widely subscribed to. The placebos work even when patients know they're placebos. If that was the case, then it would work in coma patients.
But people do have preconceived ideas about certain things, right? So it's sort of, they may believe, you know, sort of, this is something's going to be good happen to me if I take something, regardless of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, and you tell them, no, this is not going to do anything for you, you know? But you say, take this anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually taking something.
So, Phil, are you suggesting that the scientific model is flawed?
I'm saying their methodology was flawed. Their methodology was flawed.
What's the difference between the methodology and the scientific
Because model? They had a good model to try and prove that the placebo had an effect even when they know about it. Their methodology in communicating that to the patients was flawed.
Well, see, the proven part would be like checking the numbers, whereas the other part is I believe or I feel, and that's harder to measure because it's I feel better, but what makes you feel better, and the numbers really didn't matter. I think that it kind of shows that we're easily fooled, and that the power of positive thinking would be another part of that.
Oh, sure.
Like if you believe you can, you can. If you believe you mm-hmm. can't, you can't. If you believe this is going to cure you, then you're going to be pretty much cured in your mind, even if you aren't.
Yeah.
So that, did you read that article in the New York Times?
I think that there's a flaw in the scientific model.
You think,
we create two groups. One we're going to give the real thing to, and this other group's going to get a placebo, and mm-hmm. they may or may not know it, and that becomes a model. Well, the evidence is showing it is flawed.
No, the double-blind trial is the gold standard of the scientific model. You randomize two groups.
That's where I'm going with that.
Okay. Just let me explain. You randomize two groups,
mm-hmm.
right? So they're completely random. The people who administer the pills look identical.
Mm-hmm.
The people who administer them don't know which is the real one and which is the false one.
That's blind, yeah.
The people who measure the results just know them as group A and group B. They have no idea which ones receive the real one and the placebo. And because of that, there is what could possibly creep in to influence the results?
The nature of human nature.
I don't understand what that means.
I think where Henry was going, where there's the positive thinking, where there's this old...
Two randomized groups, there's equal numbers of positive thinkers in both groups.
But we're talking about how the human responds to what they've been given.
Well, we're discussing the double-blind trial as the gold standard of the scientific method.
And that's what I'm challenging.
Okay, so...
Is that really a valid...
Okay, so what is your challenge? What is your challenge?
That's they've always used that.
The use of placebos is what I'm challenging.
They can only find its effective if they give something in there. The only difference in this entire process is the medication. That's the only difference. They're a randomized group.
One does something. Yeah. Something,
yeah.
But they're ending.
They're equal group. They're equal.
They're ending up with surprised results.
We're gullible.
No. It's got it. No. Taking a pill, just because, as you say, human nature, we believe something might happen.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So then that's flawed.
Might.
Because there's assumption of based on that belief.
No, they use placebos in order to eliminate the effect of something inert. Because if they give them nothing, then you're looking at the difference between receiving something and nothing. If you give them the same thing, which they don't know whether it's active or inert, then the only difference is the power of the medicine. The placebo is just to raise your baseline, so it's sure. equal across both groups.
Sure.
I would challenge any supplement manufacturer. They did this with gluten, actually.
Yeah.
They did double blind trials with gluten, and they couldn't show that there was a significant difference between people who claimed they had gluten sensitivity when they didn't know.
That's all. Like, you know,
also,
that
Chinese, stuff that enhances flavor.
Oh,
MSG.
MSG,
yeah.
Same thing. People who are deathly afraid of it because they have a reaction every time. They didn't have a reaction.
Yeah. And the double-blind trial is the gold standard for what is true and what's BS. And I would like to see it being applied to any complaint that anyone has or anything that claims, even though the supplement manufacturers are very clever in the way they word their labeling.
Well, there was an article last week in the New York Times about the gold standard being double blind, and it's actually coming under question.
Okay.
And the reason is what they've done is they've done an fMRI study on people who were treated with placebos and got better.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the ones who didn't, and they can see brain differences in the function of the brain for the people who got better on placebos.
Okay.
So what they're saying is, what you really need to do is you need to get those people out of the group, and then test, do a blind study without those people in the group, because they're gonna.
Skew
the results.
But as long as it's a random...
By taking them out, you're skewing it as well.
As long as the randomized group, you've got an equal number of both sides.
Yes, yeah. but these people got better even just with the interaction with the doctor. That's what they're saying. It doesn't matter what you give them. They got better just because they interacted with the doctor.
Yeah. How many of them?
It was like 40%.
Maybe
it was a large number of the positive placebo group. The people who got better under placebos, 48% of them, did it just because they interacted with somebody. So that's kind of skews the results.
No, I understand what you're saying. I think it's a valid point.
And it was a long article. It was the New York Times.
Okay.
It's probably still around if you want to look for it.
Yeah. Sorry.
You got to think it would skew it the other way as well, if you took them out.
But you take them out of everybody, and then you see the real difference between the drug and the not drug. Because some people...
Not just the people taking the placebo, you're saying.
Right.
So then you take a whole group, and you give them all placebo.
Yeah.
Right? Both groups.
Yes.
And then you filter out the ones that have the reaction, the...
Right.
Yeah, oh, the reaction. The brain.
The brain. And then you
try again.
Yeah.
And I have an idea on how you could sort those people out. You would ask them, if you know that somebody is praying for you to get better, do you feel you will get better? And if they say yes, then those would be the ones that probably would be taking the placebo and would feel better.
Probably.
Because does prayer really make you better, or does just knowing that people care about you...
Uh-huh.
make you better, similar to having...
There's been lots of studies on prayer and recovery.
But if you feel that people care about you and they tell you that they're praying for you, then you feel like, oh, I've got a cheerleader. That's
as long as you believe the power of prayer.
It just
doesn't work with automatic weapons.
it's, you know, you're reminded about the study about the instant coffee. You know, they were... What you call it, when they were trying to get instant coffee, people drink it, and they put it out there, and they sort of went, and people go, tastes like crap, eh? Then they changed, they worked on it, and they put it out again, you know, oh, the same thing, tastes like crap, you know? It actually tastes the same as Berkeley coffee. Mm-hmm. They reached the stage. Why were people saying, you know, it tastes like crap? Well, doesn't they? So was this, I don't know, psychologist or whatever, but he got a, you know, at the time was women done all the shopping, right? So, he got all these women in, you know, and he gave them a list of groceries. And he said, describe the woman who would have that list of groceries. Now, half of them were They were all the same, except some had instant coffee, some had percolated coffee. The ones with the instant coffee, the word used quite often amongst that group was lazy. So the woman who had that list was lazy. So they actually they changed the advertisement to a woman who used instant coffee. The reason she does that is so she could spend more time with her family. So you see, it's preconceived ideas we have a lot of these things.
I have a story like that. About that, actually. I went to a restaurant once and I thought, wow, this is really great coffee. And so I asked them, what kind of coffee is this? And they said, oh, it's Nescafe Instant. And ever since then, that's all we buy. It's Nescafe Instant. And I tell you, it's just as good as any coffee I've ever heard.
Yeah. Again, lots of studies done on wine aficionados, you know, pouring cheap wine into decanters. And less than, so why do we, it's interesting here why the placebo effect has increased.
I think there, like what I said, there's more maladies around these days that are being treated with,
pills. Do you think there are more maladies with subjective symptoms?
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
That's your point, subjective symptoms.
And even more with not, I mean, there are, you know, bowel issues and stuff like that, that are not subjective, but nevertheless get better if you think they should be getting better.
Yes, yes.
So there are real, and what you cited was the asthma, where people thought it should be better even though it wasn't better, but they felt better.
Yes.
So,
it's a sense of hope.
Yeah, but there's more of this stuff going around. You know, now they have a name for everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But it is also an issue with placebos is it relies on deceit. It breaks the trust of the doctor and the patient.
Well, no, I don't trust the doctor anyway.
That's once the results are in.
But is that a valid point? Placebos have, obviously if you've got this MK689 drug, which is no better than a placebo for curing your depression, obviously the placebo has less side effects. So in actual fact, it's better for you because it's more inert.
Sure.
So it's more preferable for the doctor to say, well, take this placebo and see if it works. And if it works, then the patient is in a better place because, you know, it's in a safer place. But the doctor has to lie.
No, I don't think he has to, I don't think, see that as a lie at all. He knows for a fact that 30 to 40% of the people get better.
Uh-huh.
So, if he's run out of bullets and the only bullet he has left is the sugar pill, give him the sugar pill.
Oh, if he's run out of, I think that's a different situation. It's a different situation than if the first line of attack.
I don't think most doctors use placebos as their first line of attack.
They don't get any money for them.
Well, the price is the same. It's still a couple hundred bucks a pill, but...
Yeah, that's true.
The profit margins are
good. There's still, I mean, I feel like the patient is being cheated if they're being charged a sum of money to be given a placebo and they're told. I mean, if I was given a pill and thought that it was going to do better, it's one thing, but if you told me in advance that this is not going to do anything...
What happens if you... If you believe, which I'm sure a lot of people do, that the more expensive pill is more effective. So in actual fact, the more they charge you, the better you're going to get. No?
I don't believe it.
You don't?
I
mean, well, you know
that... I think there's a lot of people
you know that... a red pill is more effective in is it cardiac? Blue is more effective in... mental. They do studies on this. Two sugar pills are more effective than one sugar pill.
Twice as good.
An IV, an intramuscular of saline is better than a pill. IV is better than an intramuscular. I mean, the belief of the degree of intervention matters.
They've done fake knee surgeries and stuff like that too.
And a larger pill is obviously much better for you than a smaller one.
How can you do a fake knee surgery? If nothing else, you're recovering and you're doing exercise on the knee.
Really,
even if you didn't put anything in. I mean,
no, they knock them out. They cut them up a little bit. suture him back up and say, we fixed it?
I had a fake knee surgery. this was not, but they were honest with me. I damaged my knee playing soccer, and it swelled up, and just, you wouldn't believe it. And they were, you know, sort of shaking my leg against it. And so, you know, it's gotta be a tear. I mean, see this all the time. So they didn't do the MRI to confirm. They said, we'll just clean it up once we're in there. So they went in there and they couldn't find anything. So they said, oh, we just shaved a little bit off here, you know. They were in there.
Clean it up,
eh? So, yeah, but they were honest with me. They didn't tell me they'd fixed my cartilage. Well, the main problem was, you know, I was getting older and I was playing too much soccer. So the convalescence itself, you know, actually the convalescence between me getting injured and going for the surgery was feeling a lot better before I went into the surgery. but they were honest with this, you know. Actually, they gave me a video of, you know, going inside looking for something to do.
Stretched things better, so
it could be. Yeah, who knows? Yes. Who knows?
Anyway, I think if they charge you money, then I feel cheated. If they're going to charge me double because of a green pill versus whatever, uh-huh. You know, most pills are white anymore, and it's hard to manage.
I think it's clinical trials. I don't think they have to pay for the medicine they are given. They agree to be part of a trial.
All right. Yeah.
No, but if you are given as part of, you know, you go to your GP, so you know. I'm really feeling depressed, and he decides to prescribe you something, and you see on your bill it's 50 cents a pill. Thinking, oh man, he's giving me sugar pills. You know, you're gonna suspect.
When has the doctor ever dispensed pills directly?
Well, you know what I mean. The situation where he writes a prescription, the pharmacy charges you, you know.
But I don't think that's how these trials are run.
No, it's not a trial.
What we're talking about is the placebo, double-blind trials. Yeah.
But in this case, we're talking about if you're charged.
Yes, but I don't think you would ever be, I mean, that doesn't...
Not during a trial, though.
Not during a trial, but part of the placebo effect is the value you perceive you're getting.
But doctors do prescribe placebos, and they do charge you, and
they do.
They can. I mean,
oh,
sure. If they don't know what else to do, and they think you might get better, they'll give.
Sample. This is what is it? Samples.
They give samples.
But they don't give sample sugar pills.
No.
No, they give you the real thing.
Yeah. They'll probably give you aspirin. Or some low dose aspirin. Something relatively innocuous.
Doctors do have, like, patients that keep coming in to them. And, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. The hypochondriacs. And they do give them placebos. You know, sort of, and they charge them for it and say, look, I listen. Or they say, I have this sample, try this. The guy goes, I felt good after that.
But as they have to write a script, as they have to write a, you know, what do they write? They can't, if they give it to you to give to the pharmacist, yeah. Right?
Those are the ones I sent out. Did you see the email that I sent to everybody? They had the pictures.
The samples is true. If they say, hey, I have a sample of this, try it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
They just give it to you. The doctor straight gives it to you.
Yes.
And you try it for a couple of weeks or whatever, and they may give you a prescription to go in and get it filled afterwards.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, try this and see.
But I don't think they'll ever give you a bottle of unlabeled pills.
They're not unlabeled.
So you know what they are.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they can't be, you know, they have to have
pharmaceutical company says this really isn't, or it's weak, or whatever, that may be an inside job, but...
They'll give you the generic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, whatever they're trying to market, they want the doctor to be able to say, I like this brand, and prescribe them in the future.
So he gives his kickback.
Right.
I think Orton wanted to make a comment. Samples.
Thank you.
Free samples, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And this, as far as, you know, it was, you're talking about doctors, like, I had this friend of mine, he used to sell, he was in the selling drugs, right, to doctors. And the company came up with this one, it's one pill for to get rid of worms, you know? And so, it was a dollar for the pill, right? So, Jesus, like, it's not going to make any money at that. So what they done was, they actually prescribed it for the whole family. You know, even though they, see, like that way they could make more money out of it. And he said, like, you know, it probably was a good thing to do as well. Because if one had it, possibly the other people in the family have it.
Yeah.
You know, so they made some money out of it. So instead of getting just a dollar, they got $10 or whatever, you know.
So they do,
you know, anything that would bring a buck in, eh?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So they... One of the complaints this article made, it says we're relinquishing psychological illnesses to brain science rather than, rather than the sort of psychoanalytical. We're saying it's a chemical imbalance rather than a psychosocial problem. Does anyone else have a problem with that? The distinction between psychiatric problems and brain chemistry?
So it's, we're a walking chemistry plant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the fact that they distinguish between the two, to me, is disingenuous. That we that we're using this scientific model, in which case you can explain things away chemically, as opposed to a psychoanalytic model, which case you know, it requires talking rather than...
But it could be a chemical imbalance too, couldn't it?
In addition
to pills, talking. You know, that's the normal model. You medicate somebody and you talk to them.
So in talking to them, what is the underlying mechanism that affects the change when you're talking to someone?
It depends on what your belief. Are you a Jungian? You know? Are you Freudian? You know, it's like very different. You know, each type of treatment is different.
So it depends on your belief. See, that doesn't sound very...
I think that's totally true.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
It's very young. You know, think about it. Yeah. Psychoanalysis is very, very young. It's, you know, it's far from a developed science. You know, I mean,
really, it's compared to pharmacology.
Well, but people have always taken things. You know, laudanum and stuff.
Okay.
Like
yeah.
That.
Okay. All right. Yeah. As opposed to double-blind trials.
Pharmacology.
I think it has to do with wait, your wait time. If you have quick access to talking to a pharmacist or you know, a doctor, then you may not feel you're being attended to. But if you waited a long time, you went in and saw a person, and then you feel like, okay, now I have the magic, you know, key, and now I'm going to be attended to, and yay, I'm going to get better because I finally got to see the doctor, and he, she said this.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with wait time.
With wait time?
So
you would, it's implied value?
Right, implied. Yeah. So in the Scandinavian countries, I think you started off with that. I don't know if they have quicker access than, you know, Obamacare or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I have read about once every 3 or 4 years, there's a big article about how psychoactive drugs do not help anybody. You know, that there's absolutely no proven, you know,
benefits
to taking, you know, Xanax and stuff like that, according to these articles. And I'm like, okay, so talk doesn't work and taking pills doesn't work, so I guess we're just stuck. But I personally do not believe that. I believe drugs can really help people. And yet they go through, they publish these studies that say, no, they don't.
I don't know, but the funny, you know, I look at sort of American TV here and look at the ads on it, eh? And for drugs, they always go through this whole big list. If you suffer from this, or whatever, and I go, She's a glad old in the U.S.
Yeah, you want a placebo. Oh,
exactly.
No,
you need to just play with it.
Oh, so it's funny when they go to the side of the thing and you think, oh my God, what is this going
on? Three lines of benefit and 10 lines of displacement.
Yeah. That's where I see.
Something about where they, in the States, they can market directly to the patients, they tell them about the drug?
Yes. Okay. And you can go to the doctor and say, I saw this ad on the TV last night.
But in other places,
and I want this. And where does that leave the doctor? You know, if he doesn't prescribe it, is the patient going to go to another doctor?
You're going to lose business. Like in the US, they market it, and you can go into the doctor and say, I want this.
Yeah, I saw this last night.
You can phone in or to the doctor. And I get people to pick up the phone and call in and say, hey, I saw this thing advertised. So I'd like to have that. And if it's a doctor who knows that's somewhat of a hypochondriac kind of person,
yeah.
Okay, I'll call the firm pharmacy.
No, I've actually witnessed that happening. Yeah. Oh, I hear this thing. I think I have it. Oh, yeah, yeah. I have this drug with the...
We're talking about time,
telling me all the negatives, but I still want it.
Yes.
Nice. People who think they're sick up there that maybe aren't. Why would it be that there's so many people here that aren't, you know, so sick like that? Is it the family, the support system, the social network? Yeah, we don't fall through that. That, you know, the mesh is pretty tight, whereas in the States, all these people in their little homes, you know, in their little worlds and their little bubbles, the us and thems, and finally they can go out and see a doctor or see a counselor or see somebody, and somebody cares about them. Their paid friend will listen to them, and maybe they'll just feel better because somebody cares. It's not behind a screen.
Fundamentally, people want to be heard, and a lot of people have trouble connecting and associating with people to be heard. They get heard by the doctor, and the doctor appeases them and says, yeah, I'll make that prescription for you.
And on the alternative medicine side, they get heard a lot more.
Yeah.
Right, and it's a lot more expensive.
The homeopathist, the acupuncturist, whatever, will spend a lot more time with you, going into more detail.
But it's not covered by Medicare.
No, but the perception of the person is that, you know, that doctor cares more, and the treatment I will get will be more tailored to me. There is a great belief in the alternative medicine community that we're all individual, and that you know, one treatment of one person may not work on another. Generally speaking, that's not true. We're all pretty much made the same way. You know,
until it comes to what's inside.
Why do we have four blood types?
Yeah, our fundamental body chemistry varies.
I actually believe that it does.
Well, you think people are?
I think people are chemically different.
You do?
Something that will work for one person will not work for another.
So you, how would you? Do you take it? Have you ever taken any Medicare?
Yes, tons.
Is it just a coincidence?
I'm an expert on this subject.
Is it just a coincidence that they have worked for you?
Some work and some don't.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you talk
about... So you
about
think that's due to your unique chemical makeup?
When I am taking a drug, I'll just give you an example. I have extreme pain issues. I have an artificial ankle that's failed. And I've been trying since I've been here to get treatment for pain. And they don't have good old Vicodin here. Mm-hmm. They have all these fancy things that cost a fortune. And so when I take the pill... I write down, what is your pain level before you take it? Mm-hmm. What is your pain level today? What is your, you know, just characteristics of what it is. So I really pay attention to whether something is working or something isn't working.
Yeah. Does it clear up your
your
reflux indigestion or kidney stones or?
No.
So in actual fact, you're using it for pain, right?
Yes, I'm looking for a pain medication.
Yeah.
And I have not found one that works very well.
Sucrose lines.
If your claim is that you are unique, you might as well go through the pharmacy and start paying. Until you find something
unique.
That works.
I'm not unique, but I do think people vary.
Yes, I do.
Vary in what?
For, I
how
give
things
it,
work.
In, yeah. When you say how things work, what?
Well, psychoactive drugs, for example. Uh-huh. You know, like some people take Prozac and they have terrible side effects and they go out and kill themselves or whatever. That's been proven, supposedly. And so they take another Zoloft or something like that, and they do fine. They do fine on Zoloft.
I mean, I worked in a psychiatric hospital for 3 years. Okay. And it was a series of, you know,
trial and error.
There are minor differences, but you wouldn't give another set of drugs to someone thinking, you know, for acid indigestion, think it's going to improve their depression. We are basically built the same.
Yeah, they're very emotional.
Yeah,
but it depends on where you come from. Like for instance, you know, I was reading this case about this lady. She was from Northern European extraction, and she was somewhere in southern Italy. And they gave her something, and she almost died from it. And they say there is a difference. And if you look at some drugs, you know, if you look on the online and see, this is not suitable for Northern Europeans, something they tell you. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And this organization that I used to actually contribute to when I used to travel a lot, it's a Canadian organization. It's for travelers, tells you where all the doctors are. And it was started by a doctor who was of Italian descent. And he was aware of this. He wrote about it. He said, like, you know, depending on where you come from, you know, your chemical makeup is different.
Sure. I mean, obviously, you only have to look at two people, you know, someone from the, you know, heart of Africa, someone from Scandinavia, and there's an obvious difference between them, you know. But
you think that all drugs would have the same impact on them?
If I was a doctor and this, you know, someone from Kenya came to me and complained of acid reflux, and someone from Norway came to me and complained of acid reflux, I wouldn't do extensive studies to find out whether the way they produced acid was different.
Okay.
I would assume it is the same. And I assume the same pill is going to knock off their, you know, their level of acid production in their stomach.
But the whole side effect thing, the litany of side effects, that could be 5 people out of 5 million people have that side effect.
That's true. Yeah.
So that is a difference.
Some people react
differently. Yeah.
There are the minor variations. Mm-hmm. But the
peanut
way...
Peanut allergies are not minor, really.
They're minor to a doctor. Because if you got 1,000 patients and it only happens to 1 or 2, that's pretty minor.
But any allergies. Any allergies.
Your clients thought it was important.
Any allergies are serious. Right? And peanut allergies can be fatal.
Right.
So why does someone have a peanut allergy?
I have not, just different body chemistry, I assume. Some gene that they inherited.
There was some article I read saying that the fear of peanuts in young of parents in giving them to their kids, not understanding allergies, is increasing the amount of allergies they have because they're never challenged when they're young.
Right. You need to eat dirt.
Yes.
Yeah. It's true. Eat dogs have allergies now.
Eat dirt. Nadine used to eat dirt when she was a kid. Yeah. She's really healthy.
Yes.
It's true.
Well, sure.
It's like, you know, I remember there's a couple there.
Can anyone develop peanut allergies?
Well, we're going to hold the baby. Yeah. You have to wash your hands first.
Free fingers.
Yeah, that's what's causing all the problems. Right. They're not building up an immune system,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
They're gone nuts, people are, you know? They wanted me to hold the child. I had to go wash my hands first.
Yeah.
Well, you were going to hold them. You were going to hold them with your feet anyway.
People got vaccinated.
Dangling in the air.
And now they have measles outbreaks and things that threaten other people. That's a very interesting topic.
Well, in March.
What is your moral obligation?
In March, I'll be giving a talk at Open Circle called A Shot in the Dark. About the relationship between the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine and autism, which is probably the most famous.
Yeah, that's what they're all believing now. So if I give my kids this, they're going to be autistic.
Do you know there's a new drug A new disease going through the U.S. called flaccid. What's it called?
Flaccid? Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like
it's a polio-like disease that children are catching. And there is no vaccine for this. So I thought, well, surely the anti-vaxxers now are going to be, develop a vaccine, develop a vaccine. Yeah. You know? So I searched for what they're saying about this new disease. And they're basically saying it's a conspiracy.
Oh my God.
It's a conspiracy. A, is it real?
Yeah.
And B, is it just being,
communism doing it.
Like the AIDS epidemic was, made by the government to reduce the gay and the black population.
Well, that's the first
thing.
Yeah. You don't know that.
By killing children. Reduce the gay and the black population by killing children.
No. It's a similar situation. When AIDS first came out, there was a big conspiracy theory that it was
the government made it.
Because the only people who died on it were needle users and gay
men.
Gay cancer. Yeah.
But I must say, having just been in the States during election, it was so nice to have the drug commercials come back on the 7th of November.
Uh-huh.
Because so many of the TV was just full of all the political ads.
Yeah.
And right afterwards, all the drug commercials.
Now, if they could make a pill that makes politicians tell the truth.
Well, that would be
valuable.
Yeah.
Maybe it would kill them.
Give them a placebo. Maybe it'll have
it too. But politicians always lie. It's sort of like it was acceptable. Eh? Mm-hmm. Like a certain amount of it. Eh? But now it's extreme.
Yeah.
Now. That's the problem. Okay?
But again, is the reason that we we accept it, is it the same reason we believe in anything that's irrational? In other words, we don't take our time to think. We're too ready to accept.
But I sit down and talk to people, and I know absolutely they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit there and I don't say anything. My wife's the best one. She goes, I say, but you know that's a lie. She would never challenge it.
Yeah.
Now maybe I would challenge it sometimes, go, full of shit, why do you keep spelling that thing out?
Yeah.
But my wife says, no, why? She says, just let them spew it out. What's the harm? I said, but you know it's a lie.
Well, the harm is if you repeat a lie.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't believe what they're saying, but...
Yeah. But if you repeat it often enough,
yes,
it increases its validity.
Yeah, of course.
No?
It's all there long enough, people believe it, eh?
Yeah.
But it's totally different perspectives, which is what is incapable of understanding the other person's perspective. I think that's, again, with the political realm, one person feels so strongly this way that this is it, and the other is on the other side, and it's impossible for either one to understand the other's perspective.
That's right, they both think they're crazy. Nuts.
Wherever you want to label it, but it's just both of them are so dead set that's right.
Can rational thinking solve the problem?
No.
Yes.
No.
Sadly not. Some people are too far gone. They're just not. There's no rational thought left.
There's not. That's okay.
Both sides think they are rational.
True.
That's a good point.
And they can't both be rational.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They're irrational.
So, if both sides think they're rational, then how do we know we're right?
I don't know.
Because we have science, right?
I drink it some coffee.
We have facts. I believe that there are facts that we can agree on.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. Okay.
Some people don't believe it.
I know they don't, but the facts are that it is round.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But they don't believe it. So
I know,
it's not a fact
to them. That's called being irrational. So I'm saying, yes, being rational would really help if people used facts instead of just making up what they want to think about something.
But every every fact you have, someone can point and say, well, you know, that's what they want you to think. The real truth lies behind it.
But that's irrational.
Every conspiracy, then every conspiracy theory is wrong.
Well, not necessarily, but they're all around. Most of them are.
But then how do we
filter?
I always understood that, like, you know, is like the opinion is based on one of two things. It's based on a fact or it's based on attitude. And if it's based on a fact, and I show you sort of the true fact, it will change your opinion. But if it's based on attitude, like religion is an attitude, or like your political party, you're not going to change. And the only way you can change that is actually induce trauma. That's the only way you change it. Eh?
But there's a whole branch of philosophy, epistemology, which is devoted to how to knowledge. How do we know what's true? It is a real challenge. We all take this.
Yeah.
We all take our own.
I think there was an article in what you call the Largo last month on it. I think it was do with philosophy. Somebody wrote about that. Same thing. It's you're right.
I mean, we seem to intuitively know in our own minds.
We are. I know I'm right.
and we find it very difficult to challenge ourselves. Because on what basis do you challenge yourself?
Yeah, what we know is the path we traveled. And everyone in here has traveled a different path.
Yeah.
So we're going to have different experiences.
Sure.
Understandings.
But does that mean we have different truths? Or different facts?
You know, because it's based on your programming, usually like an earlier past life. Like, you know, it depends on what your life experience has been. Uh-huh. And it's part of your programming.
So you're saying there's no objective truth?
Well,
there is later on. Like, is there?
I don't think
each person has their own objective truth.
No, by definition.
If it's an attitude, trauma.
Yeah, by definition, you cannot have a subjective truth if it's unique to the person.
I'm not saying, like, you know,
but is there an objective truth?
Yes. Like you could.
But it's true even when I don't exist.
A TV show, and like, you know. It's,
yeah, right.
You could change.
Well, you know, my belief in
you might not exist.
What?
No, that exists independent of my existence.
Change.
My subjective truth disappears with me.
And like, you know,
right?
I didn't see them all.
But an objective truth. It was true before I was born. It's true when I'm gone.
God,
The cockroaches will still be here.
You know, certain physical principles. I mean, some of them have been proven over and over.
I mean, when you got this kind of change happening,
as if they are true.
I'm just
that doesn't mean in 100 years we might not understand that problem better. But it's the best that we have at this minute. It's more true than other truths.
You'll never find a nutritionist that says there is such a thing as healthy food.
Get examples for your.
Yeah,
that's a misnomer. It's hard to do a double-blind trial on food.
Because of all their
there's too many, variables.
Your body chemistry,
how do you know what it's due to?
There has to be a real openness, a real willingness.
There's just too much variation in diets.
I mean,
which is true.
No. I mean, it's very hard to say, you know, this is a fact, you know, this diet is a fact. But,
what about smoking? Do you think smoking is bad for you?
Smoking?
Do you think it's unhealthy?
Do I think it's unhealthy? Yes.
Why?
Because they have looked at smokers and non-smokers in similar environments and found a statistical bias towards the non-smokers being healthy.
And so that's relying on fact.
Yes.
The fact is that some people who don't smoke, I mean, more people who don't smoke live longer, healthier lives.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you're fact-based.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. There's just some things that, how do you find out the fact of a diet? How do you find out whether something is
good for you.
And they say, do your research, and you do. Well, this one says something different than all the others.
Well, experiential.
But how do they... That's the worst type of evidence you can have.
Experiential.
That's the worst type of evidence you can have.
You have to try it to learn.
In your... I mean, that's the ultimate in placebo, isn't it? It's your convince. It's your own placebo.
My son showed me a thing there about Bill Maher, and he sort of says, you know, he's talking about all these guys that wrote these books and diets and how you should live, and sort of, and this guy wrote this book, and so he's going to live till 90.
Yeah,
and he says, they all checked out their 60s. You know, he goes to each one of them, and he names them all, the books, the diets, and everything. And then he talks about some guy, I think he's in a rock band, eh? And he's done everything you could possibly think of his body. And he's still here, he's in the 70s. The drugs, the booze, everything this guy done. He's still around.
It's, diet's a strange thing. I mean, the things that are presented to us as being healthy, like a tomato, right? Now, tomato is part of the deadly nightshade group.
I don't know what that means. I've never heard
deadly nightshade is an extremely toxic berry.
Oh.
And it's the same family. And it contains a substance called solanine. Solanine is extremely toxic to you. But as long as you eat it in moderation, your liver's, you know, quite able to handle it. But just, there's a difference between being able to handle it and it being good for you. Solanine is also present in the green bits of potatoes.
Wait, let's back up and think about all these old ladies in Italy, you know, in the Mediterranean diet, you know, that have been eating pasta made of tomatoes.
They don't eat the inside of a tomato, you know that, don't you?
I lived in Ecuador for a while in Vilcabamba, in the Valley of Longevity, the Valle de Longevidad. These people live to be, you know, 110, 112, 115 years old, and most all of the men, some of the women, but most all of the men smoke cigarettes.
How do you know?
Grew their own tobacco.
How do you know it's not genetic? How do you know they're not genetically privileged?
Well, how do we know that these people that were with in the eastern villages, if they blame it all on water, how do we know that's not genetic?
Could well
that's
be.
That's why they have their kidney problems.
Could well be. That is certainly something you've got to look at. If there isn't, if there is isolation of the population, that could be true. I don't know how
I... The other part was they lived up in the mountains in the Andes, and they would be coming down and walking. They would be doing their own work. I mean, these people could be, you know, 80, 90, 100, 110, and they're still moving around, coming down to the markets and such.
Well, you could say that Florida is a healthy place to live, because look how many old people live there. Are you going to be careful with your conclusion? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the place of George is well like that. In the
mountains. Exactly.
And
the blue zones are what they call them, you know, where the people live long. But I was amazed at, you know, and they'd sit and they'd be rolling their cigarettes, they'd make their own, you know, out of really lightweight paper, and they'd sit in the marketplaces and the ladies would be there doing that. And the guys would have their singed mustaches and such. But
they don't have the tar, nicotine, and additives. They
didn't
have
all the
additives
put it in. Exactly. It was pure tobacco.
But before they had additives, people were still... I mean, the carcinogens are part of the leaf. It's not the additives is to keep the leaf burning. The additives is to, you know, and they will...
That's an addiction now.
Well, they'll breed the leaf to have more nicotine.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But the stuff is really to you know, the additives... I'm not the, everyone says, what's the other, you know, if you smoke natural tobacco, you'll be okay. No. No. It's, you know, the carcinogens are part of the leaf when you burn it. You can distill it, you can isolate the chemicals responsible. And if you look at people who get cancer from smoking, it occurs where the trachea divides into the
lungs.
Bronchi. It occurs within, you know, because the smoke hits there.
Yeah.
And it usually occurs within a few centimetres of that. In actual fact, it's not lung cancer, it's bronchial carcinoma that smokers get. But, you know, it's...
And black lung.
But all these, you know, it's very difficult to make, you know, why are there blue zones? You know, these people just... genetically privileged, or maybe they're just live in an area where there's very little damage done to their DNA that, you know.
So
that,
far they've lucked out.
And very clean.
It could be luck.
Exercise.
Right. You know. Yeah. It could be all sorts of things.
And,
yeah, but
they're studied a lot.
Yeah.
But then, and why are they the opposite? The shit zones or whatever, where people get really sick a lot.
Yeah.
Chernobyl or whatever. Or these villages east of us.
Yeah.
These nine villages along the lake.
Chernobyl's doing really well, by the way. all the animals have come back, and they're very happy.
In fact, now the animals that don't have men to deal with, they're
got rid of that.
They don't shop the center aisles of the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about the, there's a bunch of ladies that never left Chernobyl, and they lived there in some little village, and they were fine the whole time.
When a city gets a second chance, they can do everything they want to right. It's the survival of the fittest.
Yeah. It's interesting when people report on things that are, you know, say, look at this group here, they're fine. But, you know, epidemiologically, are they? You know what I mean? It's difficult to cherry pick a result and come to a conclusion. I don't know about, I mean, it may be that the you know, the dangers of Chernobyl were, you know, overplayed. But I know there are various, I think it was in Japan where there was some...
Fukushima?
Yeah, I think where the workers went in there.
Yes.
And basically knew they were...
Yeah.
Fukushima.
The workers went in there knowing... Yeah, it was sort of a duty and obligation. It was a, you know, and they expected, to die from their exposure, and they did. You know,
the placebo effect. They expected it.
Oh, I see. Had they not expected it?
They should have taken placebo.
Negative thinking, that's what causes it.
Does anyone else got other comments about placebos, thinking, positive thinking?
Yeah? I don't believe in homeopathy, obviously. But a friend at a place does homeopathy on dogs. And she said, it can't be placebo because the dog doesn't expect it. But I put this stuff on this rash and the rash gets better. Okay. I have no answer. I'm like, it's any okay.
Well, that would be an interesting, that would be an interesting study.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. I would not discount what she's saying, but
I know, I have no answer.
Saying
but that's
that,
not a placebo, that's an alternative medicine, right?
Yeah, well, it's 5 billion times.
It's synonymous.
Yes, yes. But it could be the extra care
of the water.
The extra the animals receiving.
They'd have to do that on a lot of dogs to see if there's an effect. I mean, one effect doesn't tell you very much.
Dog,
right.
I mean, you know.
You have to do it on a few thousand dogs. And you also have to have other put aside dogs where you don't do it and see if they just get better.
Treating her dog or a dog she knew or something.
But yeah, like, well, I short hair,
maybe it works.
Old, young,
spotted.
It's also actually with dogs. Dogs are so sensitive to their owners that I would think that if the owner expects the dog to get better, chances are the dog might get better. You know? Yes.
Maybe it's a stress rash.
Yes, exactly. And the owner thinks, oh, now I fixed it. And so now I can relax.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Dogs are great for eating.
Oh, sure. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. So, but it would be a really interesting study to do.
It was.
Yeah.
Because diluting something till it's nothing,
It's ridiculous.
But I'm curious, in the plaza, there's a homeopathy next to the bank, I believe it. Homeopathy and naturopathy. They're both, you know, the guy's a practitioner of this, but they both have different models of action. Right? Homeopathists don't believe in the germ model. They believe the germs are always with you and it's the imbalance that brings the germs to the germs don't cause the disease. They're always out of balance. It's out of balance. They manifest themselves.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's only a case of matching symptoms to similar diseases that you affect the cure. Right?
They're actually working on that, aren't they?
That is completely different from naturopathy, which says, okay, well, I'll give you something, and it'll have a pharmaceutical effect, but it's a natural substance. You know,
like
hemlock.
Like hemlock.
Like
hemlock will cure anything.
Yeah. arnica or aspirin is the white willow, is it? White willow. Digoxin from the foxglove. I mean, it's nature's cures.
Yeah, there's
the model is the same. It's just most things now are synthetic, and as opposed to natural. But homeopathy completely discounts that theory of disease.
I think those things are popular because of their name. Doesn't homeopathy sound scientific? Just the word.
I'm homeophobic. homeophobic.
Homeo, yeah. And apathy. I mean, it just sounds so legitimate, doesn't it? I think that's where they get a lot of their
the word home in there, you think?
Well, homeo, like homo, like people.
Yeah.
And apathy, that sounds very legitimate. I mean, it just sounds like it should work.
Well, if you do nothing, your body is designed to
fix itself.
Right. So there is a regression to the mean. And the doctors know this. Take two pills and call me if it doesn't get better. I mean, they know that over time, the chances are it's going to get better.
Right.
So all you have to do is wait. And most things, unless there's an underlying chronic cause, will cure themselves. And, how seductive is that for the homeopathist that says, I can sit with you for an hour and look very concerned and very involved in you.
We all would have died off, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
What is the stuff where they place a plastic bag of something in your palm, and if you can't hold it up or this one's lighter, it's...
Kinesiology? Kinesiology?
No, it's some apathy, like homeopathy or something, but they have all these bags, like one is salt and one is sugar and one is rice and one is something else.
Oh, yeah, and I think I've, yeah.
It gets heavier if it's...
Yeah.
Somebody came to my ex-church and tried to sell this on people.
Is it safe to say that at the root of all human illness is homoapathy?
Yeah, it's curious. I just despair at some of the belief systems, our beliefs that people have that go into this, into magic, basically. And it's
voodoo.
And you're back to the placebo, because if it's a subjective symptom and you get the alternative treatment, and the alternative treatment is quite benign, you're fine.
You get the shaman that does the surgery
the psychic surgeons in the Philippines.
Psychic surgery, yes. With the pig bladder.
Lay you out and then they punch and throw some piece of chicken out. And
yeah. Have you seen Randy's talk on homeopathy?
Uh-uh.
He takes a plus 40, I think it is, the homeopathic sleeping pills. He just chugs down a couple of bottles. He says, don't worry, it's like 40 pills in each one. And in the UK,
Wait a minute, finish it. So what happens? Did he get tired, or his deal is like, look, I'm not tired.
Nothing happens. There's nothing in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
he's
fake it.
No, it's a part of his talk on homeopathy.
Oh, I see.
At the beginning, he just chugs a couple of bottles and says, don't worry. In the UK, there's a group that goes round and they stage, overdose ins. I'm going to love ins, where they overdose on homeopathic medicine. They usually do it for the press, and they're all chugging their bottles.
Nothing
else.
They're M&Ms or something?
Hmm?
They're M&Ms?
They're just, yeah, they're just...
gummy bears.
Yes.
Yeah, but those would be hard to swallow. M&Ms.
It's usually water.
They've got t-shirts, homeopathy, there's nothing in it. And usually they're outside an A&E department just for dramatic effect.
And that's an emergency. A guy took a bottle of urine and he diluted it like homeopathy does, and when he got to the end, he just drank the whole thing. Like there's nothing here but water. Replaced it all.
Very interesting that the ward only remembers the homeopathic.
We're all drinking cow
exactly. It's for four and a half, for 4 billion years, it's been passing through the kidneys of a bird.
It's spending more water, it just goes up and down. Yeah, we're in the ground and evaporates sooner or later. Exactly.
Yeah.
So why are we so gullible? And why do we, I know I'm taking this away from medicine, but you know, why do so many U.S. people believe Trump has the truth?
If we knew the answer to that, I think there'd be a lot more free thinkers. I'm being serious there. I mean, I think that, you know, whatever it is that makes, and especially Americans. I mean, I noticed it, you know, I came over to the US when I was 30, and I thought, you know, and I thought truth was truth, and I thought news was news. And I thought there'd be some sort of, you know, baseline between the two of us, but I couldn't believe what I saw. You know, A, the news was all different, and you know, the slant they put on it was all different. I thought, well, you know, this story makes no sense. And then just this, I came over as a nurse to the US, and I think on my second day, I was in a patient's room, and they were hanging pink sheets from all the walls, covering all the, you know, TV and the woman on a coma in the bed, she had about 3 days left. And I said, well, what are you doing? You know, I've never seen anything like this in the UK. And they said, oh, we went to the, you know, sort of spectrologist or the colorologist. And she said, pink is, she needs to be surrounded by pink. It's her healing color.
Huh.
So they just covered everything in pink. Oh. And I looked at them like, are you mad? I came out of the patient's room. I said,
"Well, did she get better?"
She died within 3 days.
Well, so she died within four. She lived an extra hour.
But I was just amazed.
But you know why the typical news in the U.S. used to have some law, you know, that actually said was when you report the news, it has to be balanced. Okay?
Yes, right.
And Ronald Reagan changed that. You know, and he did away with it. So what happened is. The news...
They had to find some fringe guy to say the opposite.
What you call it? The news used to actually educate.
Yeah.
And now news...
Walter Cronkite type.
Yes. But news now is entertainment.
It was a lost leader. Okay. Yeah, they didn't... It wasn't expect to make money.
Like, I mean, like, I remember seeing this thing with O.J. Simpson and the White Bronco and people glued and, you know, the whole thing. Jesus, what is people? But... Yeah. It happens all the time now. This is the normal.
And I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm at a complete loss.
One of my fundamental insights that comes up over and over again is that for evolutionary purposes, for our species, it's necessary to have many, many Indians and very few chiefs. And we're all chiefs because we do think independently, maybe. But the Indians, they have to have a leader. They have to have a trunk. Somebody has to tell them what to do. Because that's their makeup. They're the Indians. And they do the things that the chiefs do. And our society would not, we would, well, maybe it's a bad model. But so far, yeah, so far it's led to, you know, this leader-follower model.
And the church goes along with that too. You know,
absolutely.
They
started
the
it.
Family model with the father knows best, and mom is just there to serve and the kids.
Like, what's wrong with that?
So what's wrong with us?
Why?
Well, I mean, we evolved too.
Yeah, I know when I was brought up, like, you know, sort of, you know, I'm from Ireland, I went to Canada when I was a young age, but still, like, you know, people sort of looked to me because I thought it was religion, I sort of, you know, sort of just...
You believe that shit?
Yeah, why did I sort of, everybody around me believed it? Right, I thought it was like just a lovely shit.
But you know, the question that always springs to mind is, why? Why did you reject something that was really
everybody
inculcated
believed.
From
but
birth?
The thing like on the toilet, you know, eat shit, green flies can't be wrong.
Why? I have no idea. And my whole household, you know, sort of, like they all went along with it. But you know, sort of, it was me, I thought it was, and of course, I was reading all kinds of stuff, yeah. You know. And I mean, when I discovered, I remember reading one time was, you know, women get a soul until the 6th century, you know? And I remember seeing people, women, like, what happened to all these women for the first 500 and something years, you know? Where did they go? You're a communist, you know? I went, not a communist, you know? But it's, you're right, it's societal pressure too on people, eh?
Yeah.
And I didn't give a shit, so...
We're afraid of being outcasts,
yeah.
Doubters,
closet
atheists.
Yeah.
You know,
being called.
You know,
there's something wrong with you. Yeah. You think
get
different.
It, no, get it out.
Like I mean, I was constantly looking like for this. Like I'm like, you know, as a sort of, I remember, you know, I used to look at the China there and all the guys that read book there and going, you know, the Chairman Mao, the thoughts of Chairman Mao. And I go, geez, I wonder how could I get hold of one of those books. You know, yeah, I want to see what's in it,
yeah,
you know,
because yeah.
All these people all can't be wrong, you know, and you know, I looked for one, I couldn't find one, and then, you know, there was, I don't know, this is years ago, there was this, the Chinese embassy in London had a big thing going on, they were fighting with the police and everything, you know, and I always remember Portland Row was where the Chinese embassy, so I wrote to the Chinese embassy in London, you know, and mm-hmm. asked them for a copy of the Red Book, you know, in English, you know, big parcel to my house. Holy shit, you know, and sort of my mother go, what is that? I go, I don't know. it was brown papers all around. I had everything they sent me. They sent me tons and tons of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course my mother's quite religious, she went, the priest will be here, everybody's gonna be here, you know. I mean, I read the thing, it was a load of crap, you know.
Yeah.
It was garbage. But it's okay for the people in China, you know? It was like a Bible for them.
Yeah. It was the placebo.
I mean, I read the whole thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. They had to believe themselves. I mean, that's one of the things with what news people watch, is because if you believe in these certain reporters, you believe what they say, and that's your truth. And it's different from the others, the fear that they instill.
But let me ask you this fact. Is Pluto a planet?
No.
No, not now. It's changed, isn't it?
It changed the density.
It was for a long time.
How many planets in the solar system?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not very good at it.
Is Pluto a planet?
She's
an
eight.
What difference does it make?
Hmm?
What difference does it make?
No, but for one, you know, people will cite that
uh-huh.
as being, oh yeah, it was a planet.
Science.
Now, and that was a fact.
But
and now it's not.
It's like we didn't have a soul.
So
how
about that for
your
truth?
What happened? How did that go about
it?
It was a definition.
No, it's women have a soul. Because, remember, it was the men started the religion, so we didn't give the soul out to the women until 500 years later. Look what you've done. You screwed up our
religion
then.
You wanted a soul because you didn't have one.
That's true. Didn't have a soul, eh? So...
You but I think
stuff all up. Just power.
Oh yeah. Oh, man made all religions.
I have a good story about the little red book, actually. and this is true. I mean,
my mother threw them all there when I left. Eh?
there were these, you know, across the border between China and India. There's lots of conflict and the
disputed area.
Yeah, and the Indians were sitting there, and the Chinese would always hold up their little red books and, you know, taunt them. So this one guy happened to be a physics student, and so he took his copies of Feynman with him, which is a big big volume, big red book. And so they took their findings and held it up.
Ours is bigger than yours, eh? But you're right. I don't know why some people think differently. And it's to actually stand away from the normal.
Yeah.
You're something wrong with you.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
It is.
I mean, the
infidels, as you were.
It's less dangerous today, but it used to be very dangerous.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's pretty dangerous. Tribalism, I think.
It's still dangerous.
Very threatening.
Yeah.
Yeah, very threatening.
It is dangerous.
Which is why it's nice to have a group like this where you can kind of say what you think, because sometimes we have to just pretend.
Right. And my wife did be grappling with saying people who I see, it's like people they say about religion.
Right. It's a mild form of mental illness. Like, stop saying that to people.
I go, tell me, there's something wrong.
Well, we had, I think it was last month, we had the discussion of whether it is our duty as atheists to point this out, you know, to people, because of the damage irrational belief can have, or whether we should live and let live.
I don't think we have to pick on religion for irrational belief.
Oh no, it was basically any irrational belief.
Conspiracy theories.
That's another one.
Organized
thought. If something gives a person comfort, why would you take that away from them?
Well, what happens? Like what happens
Trump,
if that
Trump
belief
that
gives them comfort leads to global warming because they don't believe.
Not global warming, climate change.
Okay,
or what if pollution? What if pollution says you should kill the infidels, right?
But so if it
would
hurt the world or hurt people, then maybe we do need to say something. But if they're talking about somebody died, the husband died, and he's got a better place, he's going to be with them, and then. Go ahead with your belief. Just sit back, just let it be. So I think it depends. That's not going to hurt anybody if they want to believe in Santa Claus. But if Trump is going to say that raking the leaves caused the fires rather than climate change, whatever.
But does
then you got to point that out.
Or does small irrational beliefs, if they're left to thrive, will they eventually result in the great lies? In other words, is there such a thing as a benign lie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you believe there's a cosmic policeman keeping a list? And you're going to judge the family down the street who don't have as much money as you. As their kids being naughtier than you.
What is it?
Yeah.
It's not convenient.
You know, how benign is any lie? I guess
that's what drags all things from there, but it's very, it's a lot of variance in there.
I mean, we tried to keep the knowledge that we had fallen away from them.
It doesn't make it came from.
Just why cause them stress and strain in their old age and their kids are going to hell. I mean, he found the website and discovered it anyway, but...
I mean, I'd like to say that I'm happier as an atheist, but I'm not sure that's true. It's not something that... But I can't pretend to be anything else. You know what I mean? I've seen people with a large amount of comfort that's been provided by belief, faith, lies, whatever. And I cannot... I don't have a choice. I can't pretend to believe in something I know to be untrue just because it gives me comfort.
Because my sister's here, I think I'll share this, but I think I'm not like you, and I think you're more like my sister. I was with my mom when she was dying, and she had a stroke. And she was saying to me, because we're both Unitarians and both atheists, and she's saying how she felt so bad because my sister, she'll never see Lindy again because she doesn't believe in Jesus Christ and the resurrection and all of this, but I will see you again. I'm thinking, I wanted to comfort her. So I was like, yeah, I'll be there. And maybe, she says, well, maybe you can convince, Lindy to leave and maybe because I want to be together and the whole family. And so I'm going along with it,
Yeah.
And then I remember one time when we were a church, and we went to a Lutheran church, and you know, she was going to sit in the pew and not go up for communion. I was like, come on, just go, just play along. So again, she took the wine, and then she stuck that communion wafer in the pocket of my jacket, and I didn't wear that jacket for a long time. Then one day I was going out, and I find a communion wafer. Had done something horrible, who was sitting in the pew and not doing it. So you were more true to your non-beliefs, and I'll take it.
Have you seen the movie The Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais? It's exactly about this thing where there's a hypothetical world where everyone tells the truth. Lying does not exist.
Ooh, that sounds good.
And it is a brutal world, but everyone accepts it. And his mother's dying, and he tells this lie to her to comfort her.
What's
and
the
it's name? Over her, the invention of lying.
The invention of lying.
And he tells her this lie to comfort her. But because everybody always tells the truth, they can't imagine that what he's saying is not the truth. And it's really a treatise on religion. Because he then gets all these followers, because they all want to know. They always want to know about where they're going after they die. And he writes the Ten Commandments on pizza boxes. It's an incredibly intelligent movie about our, you know, the lies we tell ourselves for comfort.
Well, Lord Chesterfield, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He wrote that people, you know, Englishmen believe that one Englishman can easily defeat three Frenchmen, which is, of course, ridiculous. But believing that, they can sometimes defeat two.
Yes. The person you're seeing is a liar, too.
Well, I've got another appointment at 6, so we'll call it a day and carry on here until 6 anyway, because they're open until then. Not sure about next month.
Is it Christmas?
Well, no.